Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Welcome to the Briefly this fine July morning, and thanks to our founder, Brian Brown, for that introduction. Though he has gone to his reward, he developed this show as a bastion of progressive talk radio, where we are committed to truth, honesty, facts, science, and civil discourse as we explore local, state, and national current events. We try to practice civilized discussion and dialogue across difference with the goals of understanding each other and nurturing the capacity to communicate about tough issues without hostility, shouting, or canceling those we disagree with. Sometimes we even succeed.
Wow, I'm impressed. We do all of that, Lynn?
Gee, well, yes. I'm a teacher. You know what they teach you early on in teaching is if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with BS.
Yeah, right. I got that part. That was excellent.
I was going to give a shout out for science when you hit that part, Lynn. So
yeah, a shout out to science.
Yay, science.
Yay. Yeah. Hey.
Truth and, you know, all the truth and the whole thing, yeah.
Truth, justice, and the American way. That's, I decided a long time ago that my role model as a child was Mighty Mouse.
Oh, yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, as my daughter used to say, Mikey Mouse.
I'm Lynn Kerrigan, your host today. With me via Zoom is our team of activists, analysts, writers, historians, and teachers. I call us personally the Council of Elders. When I introduce you guys, let's jump into our first topic by your telling us kind of what events you might have attended during this last weekend's Strawberry Festival, or what you look forward to as the festivities roll on into the next few weeks. Tell us what you liked, what you missed, how you felt about being out and about for the first time as a community. If you weren't here, you'll have to make something up if you didn't attend. So let me start with our sound engineer, Truman O'Brien, captain of the airwaves and survivalist pilot. You were narrating the Saturday morning parade from the downtown Voice of Vachon stage, I think, assisted by Kate Dowling, our executive director, reporting from the parade route as it wound through the island. We were sure grateful for your updates about where the parade was between 10 and 12. What was that like for you, Truman? What were the key moments for you?
Well, you know, it was really a lot of fun. I had my pal, CeCe Stone, was my co-host, and CeCe is absolutely brilliant. I mean, she is. She can wing it, man. You know, you just toss it to her and she goes with it, you know. It was really fun. And the other thing we had was we had the recordings of all of our local artists. You know, we had Bill Brown and the King Bees. We had, I'm just going blank, of course. Can't think of any of the other artists, but we had all of the local artists, Cammy Lundeen and folks, local artists that we played their music. And then we checked in with Kate, who was at her on Zoom, actually, and she was going through the parade route so we could see what she sees, and which was really fun.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't know. I think just the overall feeling of the festival this year being so much more local than it's ever been before and smaller, it seems somehow, I don't know, more like the old days or
old
something.
Days.
And some of us older folks can relate to that. But anyway, I thought it was great fun. So
thank you. Well, we appreciated it. Kevin Jones, Indivisible Vachon's activist extraordinaire, may have been riding on that group's float, but it went by too fast for me to tell. Were you? And what else were you tracking this weekend?
Lynn, I did see you as we were parading through town. I believe I saw Bruce just south of Ellisport as well. Craig Bellis had a chance to cross paths with Craig at the parade start. So it was an opportunity to wish him well on his, he said a one-point landing
Yeah, it was definitely so, one point.
Yes. But yeah, Lynn, I was actually behind the wheel of the Indivisible Vashon float, otherwise known as a beat up old Chevy truck. But in the back, we had Debbie Jackson. So she's our healthcare focus leader. We had Suzanne Greenberg and Noah Roselander, both of our Building a Progressive Majority. And those were folks were treated to Noah juggling in the back of the truck, if you happen to catch him at the right moment. But it was a real pleasure to have a chance to participate, see so many friendly faces, and hear so many cheers for you know, our democracy and making sure that we do good things like retain the right to vote.
Exactly. Well, it was great fun. And I'm embarrassed that you caught my identity out there as I joined two or three friends and we started drinking at 10 in the morning and, and whooping and waving with our Bloody Marys in hand. So it was the most fun part of the whole weekend for me.
Yeah.
And Bruce Holman. Not only the guardian of Vashon's galaxy, but the visionary behind the Vashon-Maury Island History Museum and Heritage Association's upcoming exhibit on the whale people and the natural world. I went by and saw that whale, but missed the opening, and I heard it was spectacular on Thursday night. Can you tell us about it and anything else that struck you about the festival?
Yeah, sure. A couple of things. One, we opened the Whale People installation on Saturday, the 9th of July. And yeah, I expected we'd have 150, 200 people. We had over 500 people show up for it. And it was a very impressive ceremony. We had speakers from the Puyallup tribe, from the Lummi Nation, from the Salilo Wyom people, from the Lakota Sioux people, Tlingit drummers and dancers. As well as Bianca Perla from the Vashon Nature Center, all emceed by Shelley Means, a Native American woman who lives here on Vashon and partner with Tom Dean from the Land Trust. So it was a very impressive ceremony. And then that exhibit will be open every Friday and Saturday evening through the end of August. It's actually a sort of IMAX-type experience, visual sort of an audio experience to walk inside this sort of eight-sided screen and see this best done after dark or close to dark. So and so, sort of by the end of August, that'll be closer to 7:30 or 8 than it is now as we watch the light fade, but a very impressive ceremony. And the museum was open during festival as well, since we just back up on IGA, where most of the events took place for this year's festival. And so we had a fair number of people coming in and out of the museum and seeing the whale pole, which for those of you on the radio, you can't see, but I have a photo of it behind me on Zoom. So that'll be open through the end of August. So I really encourage you to get up and see it and learn more about it. And the other part of what happened was we had the opening of the geology section of the Natural Wonder exhibit that will fully open in November. But the geology part is all outside, so you can visit at any point. And Steve Bergman and Tom DeVree have put together what they call the Garden of the Ancients. And so it's this collection of all the various rocks that you find on Vashon with descriptive plaques describing what they are and where they came from. Everything from almost 4 billion year old mantle rocks that end up on Vashon as a result of the glaciers up to more current kinds of volcanic rocks. So it's just very impressive. The festival, my take on the festival, I think it was a really interesting reflection back to the 1970s when the festival first began to introduce Vashon musicians and Vashon artists into the Strawberry Festival. And I think going forward, I think what a lot of folks found was that it was very refreshing to have it not be surrounded by curly fries and, you know, and sunglass stands and that kind of stuff, but be more Vashon-centric. And I think it can be expanded. We can go back to a parade on the main street and all that kind of stuff without going overboard with having all these kind of non-Vashon sort of elements to it. So I think the chamber over the next year will have some really interesting sort of reflection to do of how to create that.
Yeah, the one complaint that I heard repeatedly was that there were not enough Vashon artists. I mean, the crafts type artists, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah.
The other thing I heard as well was food.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no and usually, I mean, and I talked to the people at the hardware store and Sporty's, and they were just overwhelmed. They could not keep up with the demand for food because there was no other real food available.
Right.
And so those are two things, you know, bringing more of the Vashon artist booths in, bringing local food booths, local farm to market or farm to table kind of food booths in there. Right. I think, you know, it's a formula that could work and could work very well.
Yeah. And I was very impressed with the whole idea of the parade being, instead of you coming to the parade came to you. It's just what we did with the, I think it was the 4th of July parade, and also the grad parade did that.
Right.
And what a great idea. I did think it pretty funny. The, I can't think of the name of the company, but the folks who make windows, right? Anyway, this company, their truck turned in and came right in behind the Grand Marshals, and they kind of led the parade for quite a while. And they were in the parade for a long time, and of course Kate had to make, you know, a bunch of comments about it, but it was quite funny, and I think people really got a charge out of seeing that windows truck come by, you know, as part of the parade.
It was hilarious. And the only thing that I would say is that I read that they were going to do 25 miles an hour through there, and maybe it's just because where I was on a corner that people had to speed up a little bit to you know, get turned around to. It went by so fast, my head hurt, you know, whiplash.
Yeah, to keep track of everyone, right?
Yeah, and yeah. I would have loved if when people are spotted or something, you know, they could slow down enough that we can see who's actually in the floats and, you know, enjoy the floats just a little bit more, because that was creative. I personally loved the History Museum's float. I think that that said the MV... Coho Homo, there we go, which I thought was hilarious and part of the in-out exhibit. I liked it.
Yeah, right. Well, and actually that it was a Coho Homo too, because in the 1980s, the Rock Men of Vashon, which was a gay men's organization on the island, which transformed into the Gay Pride Alliance, and it's now the Pride Alliance on Vashon Island, would go in every year to the Seattle Pride Parade and have a float called the Coho Homo that was manned by the Vashon fairies, quote unquote.
Right.
Vashon. So that's an homage, if you will, to the original Coho Homo and the original Rockmen of Vashon's float in the Seattle Gay Pride Parade.
Oh, that's great.
I love that backstory. That's wonderful. And I guess people would have enjoyed knowing that. So thanks for sharing it. I think that's great.
Sure.
Gail is not here with us this weekend or this show, but I wanted to, in her honor, read a poem. There's an update I have very quickly about poetry, and I know she would want this known, but one of my follow-ups is that we talked about Vashon's new poet laureate, Sandra Noel, and I just wanted to emphasize that we finally have scheduled her introduction and her reading her poetry with other Vashon poet laureates this Friday night, July 23rd at the Snapdragon Bakery and Cafe. It's going to include poetry by Sandra Noel and some past poet laureates, and be in the environment where we can have some food and all that. So just a little update on that. And I wanted to share with you, because we like to have a kind of variety of things on the show, something that I think speaks to Gail as well as to that form of communication. And it's from Shakespeare's A Midnight Dream, Midnight's Dream. It says, it's fairly short, so bear with me. Lovers and madmen have such seething brains, such shaping fantasies that apprehend more than cool reason ever comprehends. The lunatic, the lover, and the poet are of imagination all compact. One sees more devils than vast hell can hold, that is, the madman. The lover, all as frantic, sees Helen's beauty in the brow of Egypt. The poet's eye, in a fine frenzy rolling, doth glance from heaven to earth, from earth to heaven, and as imagination bodies forth the forms of things unknown, the poet's pen turns them to shapes and gives to airy nothing a local habitation and a name. Such tricks hath strong imagination that, if it would but apprehend some joy, it comprehends some bringer of that joy. Or in the night, imagining some fear, how easy is a bush supposed to bear?
You know, we go, my wife and I go to Ashland, well, we have been this year, of course, with COVID, there was nothing going on, but we go to the Shakespeare Festival twice a year. And I've just become a huge connoisseur of Shakespeare. What brilliance that
man
has.
Oh, my gosh.
It's amazing. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it's important, I think, for us analysts to understand that everything is not cut and dried and academic and kind of easy, especially in our modern times. And poetry is another way of sort of short-circuiting the left brain and going directly to the heart and to the soul and to the spirit through a kind of mixture of takes on the observations of the world and internal feelings and mixing all that together. I love it. Bruce.
So, Truman, I assume you're not flying her down there?
Well, actually, yeah. As soon as I get an airplane back.
Airplane back.
Which I think is going to happen next week, by the way.
So, oh, fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. That's great news. Yeah.
I saw some photos of the primer on it, so it's looking good.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, you wait till you see the paint job. It's going to be gorgeous. Just gorgeous. I've seen the finished final product. Well, you know, they have to take the darn thing completely apart to paint it. And so I've seen all the pieces all painted. And it's at the mechanics right now being reassembled. So I'm hoping to get it next week. So,
oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, I hope that won't mean an end or a closure to that episode in your life because it's such a great conversational topic.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, this has been that, you know, you talk about your 15 minutes of fame. This is turning into I don't know, several months of fame.
Of national fame.
Yeah.
You've been on...
Well, there's,
what?
Oh yeah, we've been
Channel
on
Channel 5. And
yeah, and we have NBC. There's a national, two national podcasts that are out right now. One from the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, AOPA, they have a podcast about it. And also the FAA, the internal document for the FAA, there's a podcast on that as well and an article. And there's also a YouTube going to be coming out here in another week or so.
Wow.
Of the whole thing. So we had a crew come up and spend 2 days with us videotaping. And so I'm kind of looking forward to seeing that.
That's next, they'll be asking you for a reenactment.
Oh, God, I hope not. I mean, once is enough. Thank you.
You got the movie rights, however.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I retain the rights for that. Yeah.
Remember that when people start calling you.
Well, they asked who was going to play Craig and me. And, of course, they picked somebody incredibly good looking for Craig, and they picked Steve Buscemi for me.
Well, Craig could play himself.
He could. He could.
He's gorgeous.
Yeah,
I don't know about Steve Buscemi
that was my idea, actually.
How many of our listeners are now Googling
Steve Buscemi? Not the most handsome guy around, that's for sure.
No, but he's compelling. He's like watching a snake.
He is.
I wanted to make one other quick correction and ask kind of a follow-up response from y'all from another thing that I explained badly last weekend before we got going in our dialogue. I didn't have a chance to say more about some of the issues that I wanted to talk about homelessness, because we were talking about the Seattle mayor's race and the idea of the new proposal that's being floated called Compassion Seattle. One of the biggest concerns, you know, right now is homelessness. You know, what is happening as people are being evicted and driven out by climates and floods and poverty and, you know, job loss. It's gotten incredible. And this proposal appears to be a fairly polarizing way of addressing the encampments that are spreading about on city streets and parks and underpasses. And I unfortunately let us go down the business versus sort of civil rights activist without really saying enough about the Charter Amendment itself. So I just wanted to mention that Charter Amendment 29 has proposals in it that would force the mayor to create 2,000 shelter or housing spaces within a year, budget 12% of the city's general fund for homelessness and human services, and where there's enough housing, when there's enough housing or shelter for people living outside Seattle, keep the public spaces such as parks and streets and sidewalks clear by mandating those sweeps. So the news has been met with opposition by homeless advocates and the homeless community because of the sense of incorporating, you know, codifying into law the intervention of sweeping. Real Change newspaper and the ACLU have come out against it, and they feel it's ineffective and inhumane to have kind of a whack-a-mole approach to encampment sweeps. And about half the mayoral candidates oppose it, and about half support it. And anybody who wants to read a little bit more about this, in California, they're certainly having the same issues. Everywhere is probably having the same issues. But there was a detailed article in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine called Venice Blues on this same issue of how difficult it is for Venice Beach to get approvals for any kind of legislation through because people vote down the ideas for changing it. And it seems like it's pitting the wealthy and the homeless against each other, which feels to me like kind of a national disgrace and very unimaginative of us. So I just wanted to know, you know, now that you have a little bit more information, if anybody had more ideas on it.
I just was going to throw out one thing. You know, you've been reading about all of the problems on the freeways with debris being thrown onto the freeways and into cars and all of that.
Right.
They recently arrested a person from a homeless camp that was involved in all of that. And they were, you know, boy, everybody is really up in arms because now you've got one person out of this homeless camp that's causing all of this problem.
Right.
And they're all going to pay the price for sure.
Yeah,
because they're talking about, you know, taking that particular one out. So,
yeah. Kevin.
Yeah, it's always intriguing to me the, and this is, I think, just part of the regulatory legislative process we have, is there's provisions of an amendment in this case, the sweeps, which are opposed. And it sounds like in the reading you've done, Lynn, is that groups like the ACLU have then come out against the entirety of the Charter Amendment. It's always helpful, in my opinion, to say that we were, you know, support with change, and here's the changes we'd like to see. And of course, the process is set up that way, right, for dialogue, discussion, and modification of initial proposals. So hopefully we'll see some resolution in some of the more egregious issues. But yeah, my latest trip through Seattle, for those on Vashon who don't get off the rock very often, which is like me, it's a sort of a startling increase in the number of on-street motorhomes. And it's pretty clear that those are definitely housing folks who don't have alternatives.
Yeah, and I really appreciate your clarifying that one of the ways we get into trouble with trying to do legislation is packing too many points into the legislation so that people are sometimes voting down an entire proposal as opposed to, you know, the one aspect of it that they don't like.
So yeah, we were very challenged in supporting Washington state legislation this year because the cap and invest legislation, which basically puts an emissions cap on carbon pollution, or you can trade if you're a polluting company, you can trade with a non-polluting company to allow yourself to continue to pollute, hopefully while you're addressing the problem. And, there's a number, it's a very challenging, complex system, and previous systems have not proven out that they've delivered on the results that they promised. Advocate groups came out in opposition to it, largely because there was, part of their community was opposed to the bill. Well, the bill did pass. We had choices to say support, oppose, or support with change. And the beauty of that system is that we came out in support with change. And it keeps the conversation going, because then you can say, I can support you if you move in this direction. And so I think that's the art of the dialogue that we do need to preserve when it comes to issues like this as well.
Well, it strikes me as being similar to the this ranked choice voting thing that we were talking about earlier, where it's leaving the option open to have your voice heard, and yet, it's not an all or nothing, which is sounds brilliant to me.
I had never thought about until just now the notion that, as you mentioned, Lynn, here's an amendment that has multiple pieces, and the idea of ranked choice voting of, okay, here's the pieces that I most support. And essentially it's a prioritization. I don't know if anybody's thought about how to arrange that, but it certainly seems worth discussing, if not possible to implement.
Mm-hmm.
Australia, New Zealand, because they have rank order voting, and they've had for generations now, they refer to the American system as first past the post. Kind of a horse race analogy, it's all or nothing, there's a winner and everybody else is losers. And what they do in their parliamentary systems, and this is one of the things that, the Westminster parliamentary system compared to the American sort of federal system has an advantage, is that legislation can often be put together in that way. It's not an all or nothing. Legislation is built in a parliamentary system and passed and often in sections, not as a whole. And so it really, there are mechanisms in place to do that. And just our system of sort of, and it goes, I think, deep into the American psyche of sort of manifest destiny and winners and losers. That's part of the American political system. It becomes an all or nothing kind of thing. Either pass the infrastructure bill or you don't pass it, even though you may like parts of it or not like parts of it. And I think there are models where you can look at legislation, massive legislation, incrementally and pass pieces of it without necessarily passing all of it.
Yeah, I agree. And my experience legislatively has been that we do it, but we do it in a weird, long drawn out, difficult way. People introduce legislation here and often don't expect it to pass the first time. They expect to hear all the blowback and the ideas and what you talked about, Kevin, in terms of what parts work and what parts don't for people. But that means it has to be reintroduced, and the campaign's paid for another year or two of that effort, and so eventually we may get there.
Yeah, but many times it doesn't even come out of committee, and in committee is where all of the arguing and all of the negotiations take place.
That's right.
And so the final product eventually comes out of committee but they hope to work out all of those issues in committee rather than on the floor.
Right.
And so I'm now kind of intrigued with the same thing Kevin was saying. Well, is there some way that, we can change that system so that it's, it's more rank order type of decision making? And maybe we do that in committee. I don't know.
Well, and this one is an initiative process or a referendum or whatever you want to call it, which makes it even more discreet, it's one thing that has been developed by you know, in this case, sort of a broad coalition of business and community leaders. And yet it doesn't look at, you know, like in legislation, you've got multiple people from multiple departments or approaches there to be able to talk about it. And the initiative process is an appeal directly to the people.
Right.
And it'll either, you know, rise or fall. Right. But it'll be interesting, and I hope that the folks in Seattle who are going to be choosing their mayor, and, you know, on August 3rd is the primary ballot due date, and then the general election in November. So, you know, remember that, and, you know, let's see what happens, and if they're able to put together any ideas that will both support people who are unhoused and keep the city states, the city streets safe. That's hard to say.
Well, and let's not forget that this Seattle is sort of removed from Vashon, but whatever Seattle does will influence what King County does.
That's right.
And King County's, whatever King County puts together to deal with homelessness in unincorporated King County, which is us, will influence Vashon. And you know, even though it's not as visible, there is a significant homeless problem issue, if you will,
yes,
on Vashon. And it's just because we're rural and dispersed and not concentrated like in Seattle, it's still here and there's still issues need to be dealt with. And, you know, so Seattle will have an influence, and that's why it's worth following.
Thank you. Yes, that is exactly why I brought it up. And so, you know, sometimes it feels extremely hopeless to me, and I go back and think about, well, how did things get this bad, especially regarding, you know, our cities just being now so visible with the homeless crisis in our country. And, you know, I keep looking for hope, and I was really impressed in the New York Times article in the business section this Sunday that the Best Buy chief, Herbert Joly, or Hubert Joly, now teaching at the Harvard Business School, has mounted a pretty strong argument for getting big business to go back to being more socially responsible. It was really interesting. He reviewed all the economic changes that have come since the time of Reagan, when there was that unfounded trickle-up theory of kind of corporate profits being, you know, so important that all the taxation should change to allow corporates to kind of do what they wanted to do with their profits. They had kind of a slash and burn corporate philosophy of Milton Friedman, who I had forgotten about, who promoted maximum profits and shareholder value as the prime goals of business. But Jolino's notes that resulting that what happened when all those corporate efficiencies came about and all the branches were closed and labor was really on the gutting end of what happening was with union busting and wage cuts, and they lost a lot of perks of pensions. They really valued workers, you know, not very much. And he is promoting a return to Peter Drucker's management philosophy that workers are stakeholders in the community and in their jobs, and they should be paid livable wages and good benefits, offering paths for advancement and skills acquisition, and trying to keep carbon footprints down. So what I really liked about what he did is he walked his talk, and he listed kind of what happened to Best Buy from his tenure, where he walked in and started changing things in that new labor forward end, where he says he thinks we just have to have new contracts with labor. Best Buy apparently really benefited. Shareholder returns increased 335% under his tenure. There was a 50% reduction in carbon emissions. Workers are paid at least $15 an hour, and there were 2 billion pounds of electronics recycled. So, you know, to me, that's kind of compassionate business or a more socially responsible form of business. And, you know, I don't think we can kind of keep going with only corporates corporations making piles of money and labor, you know, not. And so what do y'all think of this?
Well, you know, I was a union pilot for 20-some-odd years, and I had never been a big supporter of unions until I got involved. But one of the things that I found interesting is that on those issues that were both were interested in solving, I mean, the company and the union, they worked together very well, and they solved those issues. They solved the,
yes,
the problems that needed solving. Where the problems occurred is when you had, two opposite, very opposite sides, and where they were adversarial in their approach, and it kind of depended on who the people at the head of each one was. You know, we had some folks in the union who were, they were mad dogs. You know, I mean, and those guys, there was always a problem. It never really worked out that well. Where there were people that were willing to work together on both sides, phenomenal things happened. I mean, it was beneficial for both company and union and employees.
Great points. Yeah. Kevin?
You know, Lynn, this topic reminded me of a website. It's sort of like there's an app for that. The website is justcapital.com.
And, capital, like justice.
Yeah, Just Capital, so JustCapital.com. And what they do is they rank publicly held companies based on a set of attributes. And each attribute has a weighting and so on. So there's five attributes: workers, communities, customers, shareholders, and the environment. And as you mentioned, the strive for profit, shareholder value, the weighting in Just Capital system only gives shareholders 15% weight. Mm-hmm. Workers get 41%. Environment only gets 9%. So that's a little on the light side. But communities get 21%. Customers get 15% as well. And if you dig into that, it's really kind of fascinating. Best Buy is, of like 500 plus companies, is number 25. Mm-hmm. Now they're on the upswing, actually.
Yeah.
I was looking at who the top companies are, and there's Microsoft and there's Apple and Google are in the top five. I also noticed NVIDIA and Intel are also in the top five. And I just happened to look down at my laptop, and NVIDIA and Intel are both have content in my laptop. Who are they? And they say, oh, I own some other stuff. It is pretty fascinating to go take a look at where different companies relate. And what I would love to do personally is, you know, get people together who've like worked at maybe a dozen of these companies. You know, somebody who's worked at maybe two of them, and somebody else who's worked at two or three. Just get together and talk about, you know, what's your experience working for that company? Because I work for the Boeing company, and they're way down on the list. They're like 200 or something. So anyway, it's a fascinating look at the rankings of these companies, and particularly since it puts so much weight on workers and community.
Yeah, thanks for that. Bruce?
It's also interesting to contextualize it in terms of look at what the confluence of the Trump presidency and COVID has brought to the American economy. It sort of created a crisis similar to what the Great Depression created in the late 1920s and early 1930s. And what came out of that Great Depression was basically 50 years of a recognition that government has a responsibility for regulating and controlling the economy, number one, and has a social responsibility for people. You know, it's embedded within the Constitution, you know, to create, you know, prosperity, to defend the United States. If you read the opening of the Constitution, it lays out what government's for. And the Reagan Revolution began to change that.
Yes.
And that sort of consensus between Republicans and Democrats that dominated into the 1950s and 60s. I mean, Dwight D. Eisenhower, you know, no leading light of liberalism by any sense, recognized that government had a responsibility for the welfare of people. That began to change with Reagan. And sort of has intensified in the 90s and 2000s with the Republican Party, culminating in sort of the Trump presidency. and the pandemic coming into that really has led us to the point where we are the nexus, I think, of potentially moving into a new deal, if you will, a new conception of what government responsibility is and corporate responsibility
right.
is, because we work together and can take us into a glorious new future potentially, or can lead us to a disaster. And so that's the point we are right now.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Since we're headed toward the end of the program, I want to mention Bozos in Space. Because that's not a mispronunciation.
She might.
Well, I just think that here we are talking about government responsibilities to the people and how many billions of dollars are going into corporations deciding that they're going to work towards space tourism and space colonization. You know, I just think it's really interesting. You know, Jeff Bezos's Blue Origin launched already. He's up and back with his four passengers. It just seems, you know, I don't know. Would you want to pay $330,000 to go up in space at the expense of what else that $330,000 could do? Truman.
Bruce, go ahead.
Okay.
No, it just reminds me of those old arguments when I was young about Playboy magazine. Oh, well, it has some great articles in it.
Yeah.
It's sort of the idea that, yeah, there's a lot of innovation that has come out of both Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos' space program. But is it worth it?
Yes, that's my question.
The one thing I want to say about that is, you know, NASA has spent billions and billions of dollars on the space program. And out of it, I mean, there's been tremendous innovation and that's come into our society. And my thought is, how much more is going to come out of this privatization? I mean, I'm kind of for it myself. I think they're going to save us money in the long run in the space program. And, you know, but anyway.
No, I think it's fascinating. Kevin.
Yeah, it's definitely timely. I mean, I've seen one headline already that talks about the excesses of the billionaire class and what are they really spending their money on and that focus. So there's that dynamic tension, right, Truman, of, you know, what's going to come out of this investment and is it going to benefit society in a way that people will look at it and say, yeah, that was a good thing. We've also got, I see just at the start of the show, a headline on an email, a subject line, Earth to Bezos, pay your fair share.
Yes, man. Pay your
taxes. Whenever you step into the limelight, you know, multiple things happen. So, you know, let it play out. It'll be interesting to see how things end up.
Well, it does capture the imagination. And that's the part of us, I think, that needs to be, if not captured, loosed on the world.
And I'm thrilled to see Wally Funk finally get to space. I thought that was exceptional. I really appreciate Bezos doing that.
And okay. For those who don't know who she is, she was an early female, was she an astronaut?
Trained in the astronaut program. Yeah. Okay, folks, we're out of time.
So we'll sail on.
See you all next week.